happens to be in a valley or a few valleys, so you see a few houses and then you drive up and over the curve and all over. It's kind of interesting. You just see a few houses at a time. But when you see any, whenever we drove anywhere, the woman who was driving us around would say, that person is your father's third cousin, Paul. And then we'd drive by a house and she'd go, that house it belongs to your father's second cousin, Paul. Literally everything he's related to, the entire town. We got stopped by construction. That construction worker, Paul, that was your father's third cousin. and then she drove by not looking and said, that red house there belonged to your father's cousin. And seeing our confusion, as we saw only 10 white houses, she went, what? When did they paint the house? Anyway, it's a small point. But one evening in this little town, Paul's cousin fired up her car to drive us down the hill to another house, the house of yet another third cousin, where the family was gathering. It wasn't a fancy house. It wasn't a big house. It was lovely. Anyway, he had put tape, they sort of have big coffee tables in Norway, so he'd put a white tablecloth on all the coffee tables and colored napkins, and we sat there, and Gunnar was the fellow's name. He was very nice, and he had been married for about 40 years, and his wife had died a year or so ago, and so when he was going to host the gathering, he decided to order sandwiches, they're beautiful sandwiches, not the kind we're used to, or that I'm used to, that you slap together in the morning because when you open the fridge, there's nothing else. But beautiful, not fancy like ours, but beautiful. So the meal wasn't fancy, it was sandwiches, but with all those different things put together so beautifully, it seems like a feast. There were 15 or 20 relatives maybe crammed into this little living room, all visiting with each other, and after a while, all remembering stories from their childhood 60 or 70 years ago. Some of them, not quite that old, all of them. And the gathering itself, in a way, was like a feast. Not just for us, but for the others there as well. Not because of us, that's for sure, but we were the excuse to get together, I guess, which I don't think happens that often. And so it was a feast for them as well, these sandwiches. The reason it came to mind is, oddly enough, because of today's gospel. Those two stories in the gospel, as this person I was reading had reminded us, they're not really woven together, but they're just kind of layered one on top of the other. Jairus, a leader of the synagogue, he fell at Jesus' feet and pled for the life of his daughter, this young girl, 12, we hear towards the end, just at the transition of her life to a woman, is about to die. She's about to be taken from her family. It's not the way those transitions are supposed to be. And so Jesus follows along with Jairus, planning to save his child. But then all of a sudden, there's another layer that starts. It's not connected, it's just kind of interjected. This woman who has herself been hemorrhaging for 12 years, a woman also at transition, one of those times when things go wrong and our bodies betray us for this long part of her adult life. She has suffered much at the hands of doctors, it says. She's been desperate for 12 years, spent all of her money, given herself to getting well to no avail. 12 years. And the older woman, in need and desperate for all those years, just touched Jesus' cloak, hope against hope, hoping that something would help. And it does. She's healed. Jesus heals her and commends her for her faith. And it says along the way that she was able to pour out all her troubles to Jesus. And in the end, as well as her going with healing, he sends her on her way in peace. It's amazing. And that part, that chunk of the story is wrapped up, and we return to the girl. The little girl, she's also given new life. Her mother and father, both who have thought they would have lost their child, who have been told they did, who would be living with that desperate grief, also learn at that moment what it is for her and for them all to be given a new lease, a new time together, new life. The stories aren't connected, as far as we know. I guess they might have been third cousins, but we don't know. Except that they are told together, these stories. The gospel, Jesus' story layers these stories together of healing. The intimacy of these stories, I think, it touches our own lives. The children that some of us have lost. The way that any of us might fear that we will lose those that we love to death, perhaps, or some other way. The way that our own lives and bodies can get out of control in so many different ways, like for the older woman. Those personal stories, those stories that any of us think are only our own, as those people would have thought they were only their own stories, they come together that day in our readings as human stories. The ways that any of us might seek healing without anyone knowing. There might be things we just don't want people to know. That too, I think, is part of our universal story. There are ways that all of us are vulnerable. Ways that any of us might need to pour out our hearts to God or to those around us after a lifetime. Ways that touching Jesus can give us peace or strengthen our faith or kind of stem whatever it is that drags us down. All those things, those human experiences, bring us all together. And so those women's stories are part of ours. The stories of their families are part of our stories, and God is intimately connected to those stories. They are God's children, like us. They are God's daughters, like some of us. God is the base for it all, kind of the bread on which they build their lives like we do ours, the substance of their lives like for ours, maybe even just the final touch like on one of those fancy sandwiches, which adds beauty to our ordinary lives together. All of that we hear in that gospel. And so too, in a story so different in the reading from Samuel, you don't really get the flow of the story in the way it's written in the lectionary, but in essence, Samuel dies. There's a big battle, his sons are all killed, and he ends up falling on a sword, ending his own life. Because it was clear it was going to happen anyway. So the story is so different in that reading of Samuel, this king and his final battle, losing his sons, his own fear of what was happening, and the violence with which he lives in the midst of defending his reign or fighting for his nation, all of that gives shape to his life, the life of his family, and also to all of God's people. The story, in a way, is a lot bigger than the gospel. Not totally, though. It's sort of a less personal stage, some of it, but not always. We also hear of the deep love of David and Jonathan. And in this story, the way it's told, the personal, the intimate lives of all those named, we hear it. The ways in which we all live, and the ways for those people that they live that is so closely tied up to the fate of their people. It's part of the fabric of their nation and our lives, and all of the interweavings of our lives is tied up with the fate of our nation too. The personal, the community, the nation. God woven into it, grounding all of us, shaping our world, and healing us when we need it. So it is for all of us. Whether our ancestors have lived on this land for thousands of years or for hundreds, or whether we ourselves have been here for just one or two, all of our stories are still tied up together, brought together, in the midst of whether it's political movement or whether the struggle and fear and joy of our own stories. Love or fear, joy or hope, it all comes together, layer upon layer upon layer. And so that's the way it is today, and it's Canada Day, which is just one more layer. It's a day when we think of this country with fondness. We also remember the strange, ambivalent beginnings of this country. Some people beginning and living with good intention all those years ago, others seeking for power and wealth, no doubt, just like humans tend to do everywhere. And I have no doubt that if you happen to be here from somewhere else, that as you hear Canada Day, I know that that other place is also in your mind and heart, it would be in mine. Canada Day, in the way it's a story of politics, like that first reading, but sandwiched into that political story are the human stories that we and all of our ancestors have always lived from so many places and so many realities. I think for us as Christians, though, the reality is that in the midst of all the political and personal realities, our lives, our stories, our direction is always set in the midst of the good news of God, which is for all people. Our lives are based on it. Not just our lives, but our perspectives on the whole world. It's from God's good news that we live our lives. It's from Jesus' compassion that we orient our lives towards others. In the midst of hard times in our families or celebrations in our country, it all comes together, layer upon layer, in the faith that we share. The love that God gives, the hope that is. It turns it all, in a way, into a feast of sorts. Maybe not this day, it might not feel like it, though it might, but one day we know it will be a feast. A feast, just like this bread promises. A feast, a foretaste of the feast to come. Amen.